Wow.
Woo!
Yeah, I spent all day on that.
That's awesome. Welcome to the Energy Realities International Discussion. And today we're talking with David Blackman, Stu Turley, Irina Slav, and myself, Tammy Nemeth. And today our topic is, are EVs a reality? And yes, I suppose they are a reality, but there seems to be some hiccups in the rollout and implementation of the sort of EV mandates. So starting in the top left corner, David, what do you think about our EV realities?
Well, we're having problems in the EV sector in the United States for sure. This year has not gotten off to a good start, for example, for Tesla, which in its quarterly results reported its deliveries for the first quarter of 2024 were down 20% from the fourth quarter of 2023 and 8% lower than the first quarter of last year. This could indicate that the slowing in the increase in demand in the United States is beginning to morph into a decrease in demand in real terms for electric vehicles. At the same time, Ford Motor Company, which lost $4.7 billion on its EV division last year, announced that it is delaying the introduction of new electric SUV and pickup truck models for at least 2 years and maybe longer. It's also mothballing several big manufacturing plants for EVs for what it calls a retooling. And the company also announced at the same time a change in strategic direction to now focus on not electric vehicles, but on the introduction of a full line of hybrid models across its entire product line. That is the Toyota model. And there's a reason why Toyota has been the most successful auto company on the face of the earth for the last 25 years. One of the reasons is it hasn't chosen to go whole hog into the EV subsidy market. And Ford Motor Company has apparently made the decision that maybe Toyota knows what they're doing and maybe we should try to emulate them. I would expect some similar announcements from General Motors sometime in the first half of this year, because General Motors is also losing a lot of money on its electric vehicle division after Mary Barra decided to go whole hog into the Biden agenda back in 2021. So one last thing I should mention also is that Toyota is really struggling with its Cybertruck. It's very weird looking pickup truck that it's finally introduced.
You mean Tesla.
Tesla. And Tesla also announced it is canceling the introduction of its much hyped Model 2 car just last week. So that they follow Apple, which also disbanded its efforts to develop a cheaper electric vehicle model and introduce it to the market. So a lot of fallout in the American auto industry. And it looks like the bloodbath Donald Trump predicted a few weeks ago, to much terror from the toady media, is actually coming about even before China enters the U.S. market. So it's a bad situation for electric vehicles in the United States right now.
Irina, what do you think?
Well, I don't think I can add anything substantial to what David said, but I wanted to take a moment to talk about the psychological aspect of the EV hype. Because a few days ago, I wrote something on X to do with EVs, basically mocking them that they're silent and they're dangerous and they're expensive and all that. And you know what impressed me? That I got a lot of responses from what seemed like very, very strong EV fans. And this is not the first time I've noticed this. It's like a religious fervor. They defend EVs with all they have. So I was wondering what the reason is for this. One reason is religious fervor. It's like a religion. you either love EVs or you're out of the cult. You're an outsider. Or I thought maybe there are some people who have tried EVs, they have not been happy with them, but they do not want to admit it. So they double down on defending EVs. And, you know, telling us that they are lower maintenance, but what about the higher insurance costs? And what about the danger of total loss when you sustain even a slight injury to your car? And all this, which are facts. All these are facts. EVs may be theoretically cheaper in terms of maintenance over their lifetime, but only theoretically, because how long is this lifetime? If your car gets written off by your insurer after a minor collision because they don't know what's in the battery and what's happening in the battery. So this is really impressive to me. And it's like a cult, a separate cult, a part of the bigger transition cult. And no matter what happens, no matter where EV sales go, there will be these people defending EVs on social networks and maybe making other people think, maybe they're really good. Maybe I should give them a try, which probably won't happen with where prices are going and sales are going. But this is the development that was really made an impression on me lately. In addition to all these sales, which we predicted it. All of us here predicted it. We knew it would happen. It was only a matter of time. And now it's happening.
Well, what you describe though about the dedication to for the EV supporters is the same thing you see with wind and solar, right? Where they double down, even when you talk about they want to use levelized cost of energy and you say, well, no, you have to take into account all of the transmission costs, the backup costs, all of these other things. And it's like, no, they're still cheaper. And the EVs are part of that same mentality where, you know, as you point out rightly, maybe it's, you know, what do they call it? Buyer's remorse, right? But then they don't want to admit that they made that mistake, or maybe it's not as good as they thought it was. Like the range anxiety that mothers have when they have their kids in the car and they have to go from point A to point B is insane. So this, all this does really is add to the stress of women. You know, when you think about having to plan trips and all these different kinds of things.
Oh my God. So EVs are anti-feminist.
Yes. There you go. All right. I like that.
Hey, my feminine side just came out because I get all anxiety ridden when I can't get to the next gas station.
And we do not want Stu having anxiety.
Stu, what's your take on all this? Are EVs a reality?
Oh, they're here to stay, baby. And I personally think that they are. From the standpoint, I think Tesla will be around. I think he is going to survive. I love Elon.
Yeah.
I think Teslas are going to survive. In fact, I think in one of my articles today is Elon is expanding into India. And that is a premier brand that is going to survive. If you want an EV, let the market go buy one. But if an EV can't survive a Texan test, I don't want it. And here's my Texan test. I'm going to throw a brick into a wash machine. Okay. And here we go. Let's play this thing. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. If you can't work in Texas in an oil field and you can't do this, EVs are not going to work in
it
Texas.
It keeps working.
Oh, yeah. But look, free to a good home. So, I have to tow boats. I've got trailers. I got, you know, all these other kind of things. I got welders. I've got all these power things coming in. I got to haul stuff. I can't do it with an EV that's going to blow up.
Why are you hauling stuff? aren't you? I mean, the mentality of the EV and the energy transition is that you shouldn't be doing all those things. You it's should just called, be staying in a smaller space.
For our podcast listeners, I've got John Wayne looking over my shoulder. I guarantee you, if John Wayne can ride a horse and shoot snakes, so can I. And if John Wayne can like haul things around, I'm putting a garden in, I'm putting in a greenhouse, I'm doing things on my land. I have boats. I need to do things. And an EV does not support my lifestyle.
So this is how you perpetuate the evil grip of the fossil fuel industry on the world.
Me?
You're an enabler, Stu. Yeah.
It's not going to be me, Irina. It's going to be the insurance companies that totally squash the EV environment, period. We don't have to do a thing.
Insurance premiums are pretty tough, yeah.
They're going to get worse. So, I am just sitting here going, we don't even have to let the markets decide anymore, Tammy, because it's going to be the insurance companies. Those guys with a little calculator.
Abacus.
Thank you. That's the way I say it in Texas. Acabus. The little Acabus, they want to make money. And if you have tires are wearing out, there's so much pollution in air tires that are coming in. The ESG hypocrisy. I've got a 350 that I'm going to be buying, a Ford 350, huge. Big tires, and it's going to use less tires and less pollution than an EV.
So what you're saying then is when, like, there's mandates coming in around the UK, the Europe, Canada, parts of the United States that is going, they're going to mandate electric vehicles or hybrids after 2030, 2035, around that kind of time frame. Yeah. So what you're saying is, with all of these increased costs, the only people who will be able to afford them are the wealthy. And so therefore, this is a bit of a class distinction being made, that the only ones who will be able to have vehicles, if they're electric or whatever, will be those who can afford them. And if I can just put on this comment here, which is related, where Collins asked, the impending copper crunch will affect EVs along with wind, solar, battery technologies. What are individual views on the copper crunch? David, I'll start with you. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I've been writing about the minerals issue for quite a while now. S&P Global came out with a study in August of 2022 in which they estimated copper supply, demand for copper is going to at least double over the next decade globally. And they also estimated that's going to require the opening of at least 300 new copper mines globally. If you think we're going to be opening a bunch of copper strip mining operations in the United States in the next 10 years or in Europe, you're living in a dream world. That's not going to happen. And by the way, that S&P Global study was published before the rise of AI, and which is an extreme energy hog, and AI alone is going to require the doubling of generation and transmission lines in the US grid and really in the global grid. Think of all the additional copper that would add to the findings of that study. So we're not going to double or triple supplies of copper globally, and it's not just copper. It's all manner of other minerals like lithium and cobalt and, you know, on and on, antimony, which no one's ever heard of, is a big one. And it's just, you know, it's a pipe dream that can't happen. And so what it's going to boil down to is what Tammy just said. Only the wealthy are going to be able to drive. And that's the real goal of the proponents of this energy transmission, is not to have you all driving electric vehicles, is to get you out of cars entirely and force you to live a very limited life in a very small geographic area.
Irina, do you see that happening in Europe?
No, I don't really see this happening even in Europe, which also has an upcoming, internal combustion engine car sales ban. But to add to what David said, these forecasts about copper demand are based on projected demand from the car making industry. But now the car making industry is adjusting its plans because nobody's buying their EVs. They're losing actual money on their EVs. So they're changing their plans. So copper miners, who are not in a rush to build new mines, by the way, they're waiting for prices to go up to see that this demand is materializing, they're going to continue waiting, which will probably accelerate the shortage if there is a shortage on the way. Or the shortage would not materialize because demand will not soar as much as pretty much all forecasters expect based on projected EV demand. If the EV demand is not there, the overall copper demand growth will be smaller from wind and solar and data centers, AI data centers, as David pointed out. But I don't think any of these bans are going to actually work, especially in the US. I mean, you guys have the most automobile-based culture in the whole world. You cannot get Americans out of their cars and tell them, sorry, if you can't afford an EV, you're walking. Can you imagine this happen?
At any scale? Not voluntarily, yeah.
Well, not voluntary. What are they going to do? They're going to, they, by they, I mean the politicians cheering for the ban. How exactly is it going to happen? There will be a revolution.
Right.
And even in Europe, people are quite attached to their cars.
Especially in Germany.
Probably, I don't know. I don't have individual impressions, but yeah, we use our cars. We use them to do stuff, you know, to move around. And people are not going to switch to EVs willingly, not on the scale expected and planned. And I don't think even a ban is going to work. I mean, the farmers' protests were over arguably much less than an EV, yes, than a car ban. And look what they got. They got concessions. And they keep protesting. So when the come into effect, there will be protests, even long before that, by the way.
They just don't believe it's going to happen. Exactly. It's so absurd, right? And so no one's really protesting or putting up a fight because they're like, are you kidding me? This is stupid. What are you doing? Yeah. And right? And so then it's like, okay, how... The EPA, David and Stu, have just put in that new tailpipe regulation, which is ridiculous and absurd. And everybody's saying this is absurd, but they're still doing it. So I don't know. Are there any plans to sort of litigate that rule?
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, there's all kinds of litigation that's been filed. And, of course, we've got an election coming up in November. And if the Democrats continue to press these issues as overtly as they've been doing, and you know, then they're going to get slaughtered at the polls. And one of the real problems, I think, for the politicians now is that the Malthusians in the climate alarm movement, who have always kind of tried to stay behind the scenes with their population reduction rhetoric and all their rhetoric about 15-minute cities and all these limiters to human freedoms that is really at the base of their agenda. It's really the foundation of the whole agenda. Well, they're becoming emboldened now because they see the politicians have been promoting their policies, putting all these policies in place that basically support their agenda. And so they're becoming louder and louder and less inhibited about talking openly about killing billions of people to reduce the amount of plant food in the atmosphere. Literally, that's the agenda. And the louder the Malthusians become, and the less inhibited they become, the more difficult it's going to be for the politicians to continue supporting that agenda. And I just think that's going to be a continuing phenomenon throughout the next few years.
Well, now that politicians have basically strapped their careers and egos onto this, it makes it very difficult to sort of walk it back. Because how do you save face when so much personal political capital has been invested in these kinds of the net zero transition and what all of this stuff is supposed to do? And if I could add one thing about actually two things. One, the Ford retooling of their factory, and that's in Canada. And they got a whole bunch of federal subsidy money to redo this factory and everything. And it was supposed to, they're shutting it down this year. They were supposed to open it, reopen it next year. And they said, nope, not till 2027. So now this factory that had been producing components or assembly lines for various Ford vehicles for North America and Canada, it's they're shutting it down until 2027. Right. That's 3 years. And there's so they're extended layoffs of the workers and whatever. I'm not really sure what that, how that works out, if they're fired, going unemployment, whatever. And then the other issue is with the copper. And I talked about this a little bit earlier, where there's all these copper thieves going around stripping out the copper from the charging stations, selling it to the recyclers, who then turn around and sell it back to the companies that it, that put together the chargers. So it's like the ultimate circular economy. So, you know, very...
You can't buy ingenious. That kind of entertainment.
You cannot.
Circular economy.
Circular economy. I guess it's like that South Park episode with the gold, the secondhand gold and stuff, which is really amusing. And yeah,
I love South Park.
So, Stu, what do you think about the issue of copper, and will that be a limiter, or do you agree with David that it's not going to matter?
Oh, no, I think it's going to get worse than that. And I can't believe that it's going to get worse. And I feel like I've got what little hair left I need to go turn on and just light myself on fire today because of the eclipse. I want to give a shout out to Colin again. Colin, if I can go ahead and bring this up. Cummins, Dotes, and Toyota are all manufacturing hydrogen internal combustion engines. And Tammy, and I love the idea of hydrogen. I think hydrogen is absolutely way cool as a thought process. However, the Hindenburg happened for a reason. And so the water is a huge issue for hydrogen. We're going to be limited on it. Yesterday, or this morning, actually, on my podcast with Michael, we talked about AI. David, you just brought up AI. Water usage on AI is incredible. I did not realize how much AI is using water. So we have new technologies, and Toyota's all in on the hydrogen internal combustion engine. Love it. I think the technology is going to get there. Don't call me, you know, I like the idea. But the fact that water is going to be such a huge issue is very, very frightening. And then, David, your point also, the cost of electrification of the rules of commercial trucks is fleet is $1 trillion just for the charging stations.
So yeah, talk just for about, the charging stations.
So talk about a circular economy over here. The charging stations, we've spent, Irina, what, $7 billion, and we've gotten 3 charging stations in the U.S.
Yay!
How stupid are we? I mean, we're about as dumb as it gets.
Sorry. Can I say one thing about hydrogen, and I'll make it brief, I think the idea for hydrogen transportation is a glorious idea. It's always been just around the corner since about 1973. We're half a century later. It's still just around the corner. I'd be willing to bet that if we're still doing this podcast this time next year, by that time, we will have done an episode just like this one we're doing on EVs today about the future of hydrogen transportation, because the infrastructure challenges are just enormous. The transportation of hydrogen can't be done in natural gas pipelines for people who still cling to that mistaken belief, because the molecules, hydrogen molecules, are less than half the size of a natural gas molecule, and you'd have leaks all over the place and explosions all over the place. And I just think that the federal government in the United States already, is implementing a law at the Treasury Department that's going to destroy this nascent big hydrogen hub you know, industry that Biden supposedly wants to build. Well, his own Internal Revenue Service is destroying that dream. So it's just, you know, I mean, I think as a potential alternative to gas powered cars, you know, it's, I guess it's viable if you had unlimited money, but we don't have unlimited money, even though the AOCs of the world think we can. We just don't. The world doesn't work that way. And so I just don't see it as anything that's really going to be successful.
And besides, they want it to be green hydrogen.
That's right. You're even limiting
hydrogen.
Yeah.
It's going to push the costs sky high.
I got excited when I heard about brown hydrogen when they were going to make it out of waste factories and poo factories. And I mean, I'm serious. We got a rainbow going on here on hydrogen, green, you know.
Can you imagine the Hindenburg at the local sewage plant? Holy moly. We don't even want to go there.
We got a bunch of comments coming around in here.
So if I can make one comment on, so in Canada, they had Ballard, this company Ballard has been making hydrogen fuel cells for quite some time. But they're really meant for like buses and large equipment or whatever. And so they've been, I think, doing development since 1979, David, just as you point out, you know, since the 70s, right? And it is getting better. And I guess a fuel cell is better than something else. But they did create a whole bunch of electric buses for the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, and they were too difficult to maintain, and they ended up selling the lot to China. So I guess it depends not just on having that tech, but how do you maintain it? And what are the other risk factors? Now, Stu here has mentioned there's some comments. Mihai has suggested that water isn't really a problem because we have a huge amount of it. I replied that it depends. It depends on the location.
If you can use salt water, seawater, and brackish water, then that's probably right. I don't know if you can.
You can't to produce green hydrogen. It uses enormous amounts that have to be distilled, they have to be purified. Then Mihai says that it isn't really consumed, it's recovered later.
And
it's not a zero loss process, the hydrolysis that produces green hydrogen. I wish it was, but it isn't. Sorry, Stu.
Oh, no. I got 9 screens going. I'm sorry. The biggie is also on the AI side. When you talk about data centers, the article says the big guys can't hide how much more water they now need. In the environmental report, Microsoft said the global water consumption spiked 34% from 2021 to 2022. That's over 6 billion liters. And this article talks about in the UK, the data centers are going to be using almost half of what the UK is using just in AI data centers. The water is an issue. I mean,
holy moly.
So are you
just found that article?
The article you're talking about, they're discussing water as a coolant. Is that correct?
Oh yeah. You have to, I mean, being an old data center nerd, you gotta have, when I did worked on an $8 million server for one server, the cooling for that one server that went to the Department of Defense was incredible. And so just because you're going to put in AI and data centers and everything else, you got to cool them bad dogs somehow.
Maybe they should put them in space where it's cold.
But they're going after agriculture for consuming way too much water, among other things.
Right. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Adorable. So Hisana has asked, what about desalination?
Certainly possible. Again, it's extremely expensive. And
adds to the total cost of the process, so it can't be cheap.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did we get from EVs to hydrogen?
Well, it's just the alternative
to EVs, right?
Yeah.
Well, okay, guys, should we move on to discussing the headlines we have today?
Yeah, let's go to the headlines. Oh, boy.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, so I'm going to do this. Oh, Okay.
Oop, there we go.
So looking good. All right. So I think these ones are mine, maybe. Or did someone else have these ones?
Not mine.
These are mine. Yours were AV related.
Okay. So Irina, please tell us about your headlines.
Let me start with the Belgian farmer who's suing Total Energies for extra work, droughts, and I remember, I can't remember what else. Basically, climate change is affecting his work as a farmer, and he's blaming Total Energies. And I actually wrote about that last Monday because it's a very, very funny case. He's not suing all big oil. He has a choice of big oil majors to sue, even all of them, but he's suing Total Energies. Why? Because Total Energies is the biggest oil company operating on the Belgian market. And he has zero doubt in his mind that it is this company's and the industry's fault that his crops are weaker or whatever, that he has to work more to get the same amount of crops. He seems to have no regard whatsoever about the benefits that fuels have brought to him and other farmers. If there were no hydrocarbons, if there were no diesel fuel, he wouldn't be farming as he is farming.
Yeah.
He would be plowing using horses or
using horses. Yeah.
Or whatever. Apparently, this thought has not entered the mind of this person. So he's suing because big oil is all bad. And well, obviously, I have a problem with this because I really don't like seeing such an extent of stupidity. Or he's just joining the fad. It's fashionable to sue big oil for whatever, really. So why not try? But Total Energies recently launched a lawsuit against Greenpeace. So, you know, I would have done my homework if I was this farmer. Anyway, and then the other very, very lawsuit heavy crop of headlines. The other is actually a great story by Kevin Killett for Just the News.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a horrible story because climate activists who think, some of them think that agriculture should be banned along with the oil and gas industry, they're now trying to sue farmers and meat producers, ranchers, meat packagers for climate change. You know why? It's because they can't stop people from eating meat any other way. So they're resorting to courts to force meat, what is it? It's not meat growers, meat farmers to stop producing meat because they can't do it any other way. People are eating more meat, not less meat.
Right.
And this is obviously outrageous and very climate changey. So something needs to be done. And the only thing that can be done, apparently, is suing these industries involved in the production of meat.
Yep, death by a thousand cuts, for sure.
This is just so deranged.
It's evil. So
infantile and evil. Very, very typical of small children who have no moral compass at all. They have no concept of right and wrong.
Well, I love this tag here underneath. Such litigation shows promise for addressing gaps left by inadequate regulation and for holding major polluters accountable. And this loose use of the word pollution, like CO2 is called pollution. So, right? Like, so you're breathing, you're polluting every time you breathe, really. And it's absurd. And again, who's going to stand up for the ranchers? Now that the oil and gas industry didn't stand up, they didn't really do anything. And so now they're going after the livestock producers. Who's going to stand up for them?
Yeah. We better all stand up for them, folks. We'll be eating crickets.
I put in there that the Belgian farmer, you have to wonder who's paying for his litigation.
Yeah,
well, that would Greenpeace.
No, you just said Greenpeace. It's great because Total Energies is suing Greenpeace.
I know. Well, they're suing Greenpeace for having gone on to their platforms, right? That's what that case is about.
No, they reported wrong figures about Total Energy's emissions.
Shell is suing Greenpeace
for the platform. Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Awesome.
High time.
Okay. This one: demand for electric cars slows sharply amid surge in petrol vehicle sales. I think this is mine. So this is the UK. So there was this surge in EV sales because everyone is like, oh, EVs are the way to go, the future. We're going to be banning. We have all these ultra low emission zones. And so if you get an EV, you don't have to pay this kind of tax and you don't have to pay to go into your town or whatever. And so there was this spike in EV sales. And then when people realized there's not enough chargers around, their insurance costs go through the roof. All the different things we talked about. Now the sales are going like this. You know, they're heading in the opposite direction and they're really plummeting. So it'll be interesting to see what the UK does, given their plan to phase out the internal combustion engine, just like the EU and Canada and stuff. So that was quite relevant to what we were talking about. And I love this story. There's a EV company called Canoe. And they spent twice its annual revenue on the CEO's private jet travel last year. And I don't think that jet was electric.
Oh, goodness gracious. You cannot buy this kind of energy. You can.
Sorry, okay. Irina?
These are ugly. Are these the canoes?
And apparently,
yeah,
that's
so
the
those
canoe.
Are the EVs that they these have are so for ugly, NASA. They still?
Oh my God.
Well, yeah. And then for like these facilities, you know, to drive around the NASA Space Center.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't matter there.
Yeah, it's not as cool as SpaceX where that has Teslas driving around everywhere.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which look better than these funny little vans. People can't see it, but if you imagine when you were a little kid, you had these little Playmobil vehicles, that's what it looks like.
Maybe
they're marketing towards how can we market this to kids, you know. So those are my two little headlines.
Boy.
Okay.
Oh well, these must be mine since I'm in the headline there.
I tried to steal this one from you, David, but I did not get it.
So I'm going to go with the EPA electric truck mandate first. This is the stupidest. I mean, there's so many stupid ideas, but thinking you're going to electrify America's truck fleet, 18-wheeler fleet, 60% of it by 2032 is literally insane. Okay. There's first of all, there's not a company in America that is mass producing electric 18 wheelers right now. Doesn't exist. Okay. The one-off models that have been produced cost three times what it costs to buy a diesel truck. So independent truckers aren't going to buy them. Even the big commercial truckers aren't going to buy them. They're too expensive. They get 170 miles on a charge. Whereas a standard diesel 18-wheeler get upwards of 1,000 miles on a tank of diesel. So instead of stopping two or three times to cross the country, you're going to be stopping 10 or 15 times to cross the country and spending hours upon hours upon hours recharging your truck batteries, which, by the way, weigh 18,000 pounds that has to be taken out of your payload that you can haul. And right now the average payload is 20 to 40,000 pounds. So you're going to cut your payload at least in half. And it's just, it's the most mind-boggling, stupid thing I've ever seen in my whole life.
And before,
billions and billions.
Before you lose your other eardrum, David, from just, you know, yelling at us, please think about the tires. How many of us have seen the retreads on the tires that are falling off and everything else?
Yeah.
All of that extra weight on those semi tires are going to have all that extra pollution and all those extra tire parts, as we say.
It's going to require special, different tires. These car tire manufacturers are going to have to manufacture a special grade of tire, okay, that they don't currently make, and it'll take them years to ramp up a factory to build them, which they don't have because this mandate goes into effect by 2032. This can't happen, and not only won't happen, it can't happen. There's not enough money or manpower in the world to make it happen. And even if it does happen, all it's going to do is crater the whole economy, because you won't be able to get the goods to the grocery stores and the clothing stores and all the other stores that you got to have for people to buy stuff. And our whole economy is based on people buying stuff, you stupid idiots in Washington. Stop this madness. Second thing, okay.
Go, David.
Let me catch my breath. Tesla's Cybertruck owners are furious as Basecamp feature underwhelmed. So the Cybertruck, and I've said this ever since it was rolled out by Elon Musk in 2019, is going to be a monumental failure because the design is too radical for pickup truck users to ever accept, okay? Besides that, it's an electric pickup that won't perform the functionality of a Ford F-150, as Ford itself is finding out with the utter complete failure of its F-150 Lightning model, okay, that's piling up in big parking lots outside the Michigan Motor Speedway as a graveyard for all the trucks they can't sell because guys and gals in the farming business and want to haul stuff like Stu Turley need a car that's reliable and has some range when you're hauling something. The main complaint about the Cybertruck so far has been with its $3,000 tent they call the Basecamp, which supposedly allows you to convert this truck into a camper. You remember your grandpa had the old Ford pickup with the tin can camper on top of it. Well, Tesla has replaced that with a $3,000 tent that apparently doesn't work, okay, because it's just getting myriad complaints because the damn thing won't unfold properly and doesn't work. You're getting rust on the bodies. The buyers of these trucks are complaining about rust on the body when they drive it out of the dealership, okay? You had a guy in Austin who had the thing break down on him before he drove it a mile off the lot. It's going to be a massive failure. And you know, I think Tesla is going to be the one pure play EV company in America that's going to survive. Every other one will either be in bankruptcy or teetering on the brink by the end of this year. But this is going to be a massive hit to Tesla's reputation, this stupid truck with their idiotic design. It looks like a DeLorean, okay? It's just a big DeLorean. And it's not going to be successful.
But it's bulletproof.
Big hit on Tesla, unfortunately.
It is bulletproof.
Well, it is bulletproof. Well, like you need that, right?
Well, I get that, you know, Musk's ultimate goal is Mars. And what do you need to live on Mars? What would be useful? And having Tesla cars running around Mars, okay, maybe. Sure. But you need something a little more robust. And so I understand why the development of the Cybertruck was important for, you know, taking it to Mars or whatever. But I think you're right. I mean, there's been so many hiccups in the production line for that particular vehicle. And I think there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed to improve that. But yeah, that's really frustrating. And you have to kind of wonder now that the left is so angry with Musk and the people who had supported him before, is that another reason for the decline in purchases of Teslas?
Yes, maybe? I think it is. Definitely it is. And I, you know what I think is another problem is that Musk and his management team have thought Tesla was immune to the phenomenon we see in for every automaker, is that their body designs begin to look stale within 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
If you don't change those body designs every 3 to 5 years, your people are going to find your cars to be less attractive. And so 5 years ago, I would look at a Tesla, I'd see it on the road and think, man, that is a beautiful car, and everybody else did too. It's just a beautiful car. But you look at the same car today, and they've continued to crank out essentially the same body style for over a decade now. And they look dated compared to the new EVs from GM or BMW or whatever other automaker you want to say. So this car, this truck that looked so cutting edge in 2019 when Musk rolled it out, now just looks stupid. And people who drive it look stupid, okay, to other people. So Tesla is not immune to this. So I think that's another problem that they're having right now.
I had a video I was going to show of the carrot test on the Cybertruck, David.
The what?
It's a carrot test.
Yeah, it's a guy holding the missing fingers, and so you stick a carrot into when the hatch comes down on the Cybertruck, it cuts the entire carrot off. A carrot and a cucumber. You put them in there, it cuts them off. So you can cut your fingers off. I got that going for you. You know, I got in a salad maker. I didn't know that it was going to do that.
Oh, goodness.
We got a lot of comments coming around.
Okay, I'm done. Y'all go. Man, I got to calm down.
Well,
okay. So Stu, do you want to do yours, or do you want to look at some of these questions?
Yeah, here's David's thing this morning, I believe it was. Within the decade, there will be no more snows of Kilimanjaro. Al Gore, 2025. Now you look down here, 2024. Yep, a lot of snow. Way to go, Al.
Nothing has changed.
No.
Literally nothing.
Tammy, why don't we start going through some of the comments? The only one I really want to say is, Buttigieg is Mayor Pete is absolutely a Nimrod. Hats off to him. He does have a hybrid that he gets to plug in. He has a plug-in hybrid. Got that going for him. And that's about it. And then Tesla is really going to survive. I do like the fact that they will be the EV premier around the world. Tesla is still going to do great. And if you want one, let's let the market decide. Go forth and buy it. So anyway, I'd say let's go through some of the comments that we had. We had a lot of great comments.
Okay. Should we start with this one? Wear Me High suggests there's a better way, and that's electric trains.
It's working out great in California.
And then he said... Too bad the U.S. forgot how to build those.
Yes, I agree with that completely.
How many billions? I want to ask a real question. How many billions has California spent and they've gotten 1 mile?
They've built about 150 miles in the Central Valley.
Okay.
There's one leg of about 150 miles that's completed. I think it'll be the only leg that's ever completed. The developers of it recently told the legislature they're going to need at least $100 billion more than the $100 billion they've already spent.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane.
The original cost when it was introduced to the legislature 25 years ago was going to be $29 billion to go all the way from L.A. to San Francisco. We're $100 billion in. We need $100 billion more. And 10 years from now, they're going to go to the legislature and tell them, well, we just need another $100 billion, right?
Yeah.
This
You've
is
already
never going
committed
to
that much. You've already committed that much.
Wow.
Yeah. And in the UK, they wanted to put in a high-speed electric rail line to connect like Manchester to London or whatever, or something like that, called HS2. And they spent billions on it, and there was all these planning issues, and people were complaining it's going to be noisy, blah, blah, blah. And after years and years and years and all this money, they pulled the plug on it last year. Said, okay, that's it. We're done spending money. We're not doing it. And so, okay, yeah, I guess Europe sort of does have electric trains already, but good luck trying to build new ones. And so also for North America to put in electric trains across Canada and the US, it's a massive landmass. It's incredibly expensive. As we've seen in California, there's all these regulatory issues. It's material intensive. I don't even know if there's enough transformers. And we talked about copper.
There's not.
And what about the electricity supply? It has to come from somewhere. But with all these AI data centers coming in and all these EVs, where do you supply the electricity first?
Right. But I do agree with Mihai. One of the great tragedies in American history was our forgetting how to build rail at a cost-effective way. The city of Houston prior to 1953 had the second most extensive light rail system on the face of the earth. Okay.
Wow.
And decided to switch to buses and let all that rail infrastructure go away. And now, of course, to build new light rail in the city of Houston is well over $1 billion per mile. That's literally the cost. And you just, it's just, it's a tragedy of American history that unfortunately we can't afford to now go back and correct it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Colin has an interesting comment here. He says, doesn't heavy road transport, non-electrifiable rail transport, and aviation mean it's inevitable that a clean hydrogen economy is the only way to replace fossil fuels?
Yeah. Transportation.
Yeah. But I mean, hydrogen has its own infrastructure, multi-trillions of dollars of infrastructure issues that have to be solved. And that's a big task. We've got a system that works. To me, the most intelligent thing to be doing would be to clean up and modernize the system we've had for a century we know works, but that's just me.
Yeah.
So Mihai added, he and Colin were having a discussion and Mihai says, rail transport is eminently electrifiable. Europe does it all the time, except for the UK, apparently, which is having, and maybe other European jurisdictions. Yeah. And then Colin replied, well, much of it isn't electrifiable. That's why diesel-powered locomotives are used in abundance. I'm trying to imagine stringing up I've traveled the rail line through the Rocky Mountains in Canada, and I'm trying to imagine electrifying that and what happens with avalanches, taking out the power lines and everything. I know Switzerland does it, but I think it's quite different, the sort of winter conditions between Switzerland and say British Columbia and Alberta or whatever, or Colorado for that matter.
If it was still 1860 when we built the Transcontinental Railroad in the United States, or 1870, whenever it was, we did it in 3 years. Transcontinental Railroad all the way across the country, we could do that in the 19th century because it didn't take us 10 years to get environmental permits, okay? But we can't do that in America now. It's too late. We forgot how to do it. We discarded all of that. You can't afford, there aren't enough trillions of dollars you can print. You just can't print that much money to go back and correct the mistakes of the past. We have to move forward and look at what's possible going forward. An electric rail system all across the vast expanse of the United States is just not feasible. It just isn't.
Yeah. As Serge says here, the cost of building new railways, purchasing land to create space for them, easier in Europe where rail never left. And Europe is a much smaller landmass, more, what's the word I'm thinking of, where the population centers are more concentrated than the spread out North America and stuff. Yeah. So, but then Mihai replied. So there's this debate going on.
That's cool.
It's good. Yeah.
Mihai says there are solutions for secondary lines from cheaper low voltage catenary to battery electric. And then Mihai also adds, the gifts of bureaucracy, which is so true. And then Colin replied, time will tell if hydrogen powered trains outcompete battery trains, assuming battery tech survives the copper crunch.
It's a big assumption.
And then Hassana says, spot on, David. Green hydrogen replacing fossil fuels is not for tomorrow.
David,
next year.
It's a good thing your camera is so far away because your head would have exploded outside of the thing and we wouldn't be able to see anything except your ears. Hassan, don't be nice to David, please. We don't need him doing any.
Sorry. I'll put it on one more time. Spot on, David.
Yay me.
And then Mihai says that hydrogen is nonsense for trains, but I guess it'll depend on how they do it. If it's fuel cells, if it's you're pumping hydrogen gas in there, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how those problems are solved.
Yeah. I think the only thing holding back the U.S. from doing actually anything good is the only thing that is holding us back is the legislation through regulatory action is driving me nuts. Let's let the great American know-how do things. And it's the same thing in the EU and in Europe. And I want to really bring out, I'm trying to get NJ Anuk. He is the director, and if you're listening, the director for the African Energy Chamber on here for the Energy Realities. He's got a bunch of stuff that we've got to work with in Africa to help get end energy poverty in Africa as well.
Good.
That sounds good.
Very good.
So, are there any last-minute comments? I'll go around the horn. Irina, do you have any last-minute reflections on
Really, I think the discussion was really exhaustive. We started with EVs, we ended with trains and hydrogen.
Hey.
Lovely. Okay.
Stu?
I got 2 points. My head hurts. And it's a lot like Monty Python, which I absolutely love Monty Python when they all stand around going, my brain hurts. Right. So next time we're going to wear all of our little hankies on the head like they do. But here's what I think is going to happen to the energy transition.
And I like a wild fun in a world gone crazy. Everything seems easy. I'm a wild one.
Now, here's another one, and this is a typical way that I think is going to happen, and that is...
For a long time.
Okay, I'm sorry. That is just the way I think things are going in the energy transition. Sorry.
David, any final comments?
Oh, goodness gracious, where to begin? No, I think I said everything I have to say on this topic. I'm looking forward to next week. Thank you, everyone, for such a great conversation and all the questions that came from the viewers.
Thank you, everyone, for the great comments and questions. This was fantastic. And thanks for the great headlines, everybody. This is awesome. Thank you.
See you next week.
Have a great day.
You all next week.